Howdy, everybody. Thanks for sticking it out to the bitter end. It's not going to be bitter. It's going to be great. So let's kick this off with our panel. Please introduce yourselves and briefly describe what kind of work you do. And since we're asking, this is a capture. Can you identify all the bicycles in this photo?
So my name is Jason Purr, and I am the CTO of Media and Entertainment Technology for Periphery. And what I do there is basically bring a lot of the historic workflow automation tools that I've built with my prior company for the past 10, 12 years. We've worked with just about every kind of different asset management system and production kind of environment. And we've built a lot of different tools to help automate everything from ingest to organization to distribution. And what we're doing now is implementing new tools on top of that within the storage environment, focused mostly on on-prem environments. And we've been developing a lot of different AI tools, especially over the past year and a half, 2 years, with a lot of the newer generative AI capabilities and all sorts of different AI models to be able to provide secure, local, powerful AI capabilities in as simple a way as possible to users of all sizes and types.
Thank you, thank you. And I need you to point out all of the crosswalks here.
I actually failed one of those this morning, like logging into something. I straight up did.
I did not
identify all the bicycles.
Okay.
So I may not be qualified to be on this. I'm Bryson Jones. I'm a co-founder of North Shore Automation. We're a company dedicated to asset management solutions, started as a consultancy, developed a custom development arm, and then productized a lot of our ideas. In the last year, sometimes you're smart, sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're both. My co-founder has hired really well and made really good stack decisions, and we found ourselves in a sort of a cutting edge position on using AI in content management. And so we've been working sort of frantically under the hood. We're here because Cav saw what we did at NAB, and we sort of tipped our hand. And so we're here, you know, sort of looking at more how to manage content with AI and not really how to hopefully put people out of work.
Excellent. So AI is really a relatively new thing for a lot of people, despite all this buzz. Let's knock out a few definitions first of all. Generative AI, this is the one that has everyone scared. What does it really mean? And is it relevant other than a cool factor? And what role is the U.S. Congress going to play in that particular digital sandbox?
I don't know too much about the Congress. Maybe try to stay away from that side of things. To me, generative AI is really just about being able to leverage AI to generate new things. And what a lot of people tend to think about or get scared of is, oh, well, talking about generating new content from scratch and generating new images or generating new videos. And while, yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff you can do and fun things people play with there, the part that's much more interesting to us and things that we've had a lot of great response on is generating that stuff that no one likes to generate.
Yeah.
That metadata stuff, right? So, you know, in the past 12 years of working with asset management systems, I know Bryson knows this just as well, that you go in and we deploy these asset management systems, provide everyone all this training, and everyone talks about those 20 or 30 metadata fields that you refine down as those essential fields, or if you're one of our customers, 600 metadata fields that they like so much they migrated from one system to another. And either way, though, you have all that stuff, and then we train everyone on it, and then you come back 6 months later and 10 of those fields are being filled out. You come back a year later and 2 of those fields are being filled out. Why? Because it gets in your way.
Yeah.
No one wants to do the work of putting metadata in and typing a bunch of tags, but everyone wants the result of searching for it.
Yeah.
Generative AI, in its best case for me, I find is that it's all about being there to take over that work that you don't want to do. So we can generate really good, high quality, important, relevant metadata for every single asset. Every single time without a person having to touch it, so that when you go to search for content, you can actually find it.
Yeah, that's it. People miss the number one use of generative AI right now is text. ChatGPT, all, you know, Claude, or any of the systems use Gemini. And that's the thing, is that what we both came to separately. It was really cool to reconnect. We connected to, before this thing. It was that we'd both come to this point where we saw that, that we don't need to generate content. We need to generate data that lets you find content. And no one's doing that job, as we can attest.
And what I was talking about with the U.S. Congress, because the stuff people get worried about with the pictures and video, nobody owns that copyright. The folks who make the machines, the folks who enter the prompts, they don't own copyright on those images, which means that you can make a wonderful movie, and I can take it down and I can sell it.
Yeah.
Let me know when you do. I will take it down and I will sell it, because there's not a thing you can do until they get laws in place to take care of that, which will be maybe 2038.
We've all, you know, technology always outruns the law, right? I mean, we saw it with the internet. We saw it with so many things. So many things were created. And that's why, you know, we were talking, is like, my take on this is that I feel like we're using one of the only ethical uses of AI that generally, right? We may be putting transcribers out of business, you know, in that case. But even now, captions still need a human touch to do true captioning. So for us, it's a thing of like, you know, Jason and I found a job that no one wants to do. And that's where we're going to find actually the best stuff, is where you're either improving a human or you're doing something a human won't do anyway. So
let's knock out the last of the definitions here. There's three things that I think we need to just basically touch on: machine learning, large language model, and vectorization.
All right. What do you want to take? When do we start?
Oh, I like the vectorization.
Yeah, that's...
Of course he does.
Hang on. All right, check this out. Let me do this. Let me do the AI ML, because that one's boring. Yeah, and then I'll get out of that, because I looked this up, because there's not... If we talk to each other, it's one of those things you just sort of know if you work in the industry for a while, but you don't ever like stop and figure out what it is. I found this thing, this guy whose name I can't pronounce on a great site, basically laid out this. AI are systems that generate what looks like artificial intelligence. I like to say it that way, right? So they're systems. ML is like the brain. So the machine learning part is the part of these systems that actually can identify, learn patterns, and identify things on it. Whereas AI could include things like natural language processing, all kinds of different rules, sometimes things that aren't even like associated with thought. It may just be object characterization and things like that. So just don't worry whether it's AI or ML or whatever. People who try to tell you and sound smart because they're talking about one or the other, even on my shirt, I put them together, AI and ML. So ML is part of AI, basically. But the exciting stuff is LLMs, and LLMs, which use a technology called vectorization that's pretty groovy. Yeah. Get on that one.
So on the vector database side of things, there's tons of great, extremely technical, extremely complicated things you can find online if you go search for them, and don't do that. It just isn't really helpful. The easiest way I think of to look at it is this. In your historic traditional MAM structure and the way that we store information regularly with regular databases, you have a metadata field that has a metadata value. And if you want to find that asset, you better know at least the first three characters of that metadata value, or you're never going to find that asset. In a vector database, it's different. When I take a look at an object and I look at that object, I call it this. Bryson calls it that. Someone else calls it this. But in the database, what gets stored is all math. It's all just numbers. When someone else comes and searches for that same object, they're going to call it this, something completely different in that same vector space. But the math is all similar because it's all describing the same object. And so that's the power of a vector database and the power of how AI remembers things and stores things, is it doesn't matter what you called it or you called it or you called it or I called it. We're all talking about the same thing. So it's all stored in the same space, which means when someone goes and asks for it in a way we never thought to ask for it, it's able to find it.
Yeah, the way I use it, we spent years, and this is really funny because you get to a point where I love hanging out at these events because people like done this stuff for a long time. People are kind of over their own technology or their own job. You know, you talk to these guys and they're like, yeah. And so for us, you know, you'll see somebody who's new to like asset management and they're like, oh, we're going to develop the schema for our database. We're going to work on the schema together. And we've done, God, lifetimes of consulting with people like figuring out the same 12 fields. And so the one that I use on this is, The way I use this is that when we're working on a schema, if you're like, okay, well, okay, I want city, state, and country. You go, oh, okay, cool. And then someone goes, well, I need to find European countries. You're like, oh, you're right. Put a field for continent. And you're like, okay, cool. Well, you know, I need Northern European country. Well, a region. And you just can chase that forever. In a vector database, because of the technology of the LLMs, NASA, the Apollo gave us Tang and memory foam, and LLMs gave us this idea of similarity and vectorizing text embeddings. So you can say, I need to see European countries. And the system knows these countries are from Europe. And you don't need to worry about the schema so much, because if you mention Greece and Italy and France, it's like, oh, those are European countries. That's the thing we're talking about. What if you showed up to an archive and you didn't know what to search for, to go back to your first thing? You don't have any letters. You don't have a term. Can you just ask it a question? And that's where generative AI is going to change content management.
And that's the big thing that we're seeing on the periphery side. One of the big things we're doing is we don't talk about building asset management as a new thing. There's plenty of asset management systems out there. We don't want to build new databases. We talk about content understanding. We talk about building an intelligent content engine of a series of agents that understand your content and understand your users and understand your business, so that it understands what's relevant and what do you care about, so that when you search, you're asking a question and searching based on the context of what you care about and getting results that are based on an actual reasoning behind why this could be a good result. So that's a whole different paradigm.
So would you say that the reason we're seeing these dashboards first pop up in the NLE space, you know, Premier and Avid and Resolve, is because they're the ones that most interface with the folks that have the least amount of information about what they want to find?
Yes. But the difficulty is that, so to get into the real world right now, right? So right now, if we come back into this, and by the way, this is not some like, oh, in 5 years, we'll do this. We both have this running. You're going to release yours like later this year, right? Like, so Amy, their AI assistant in periphery will be out later this year. We have this running. You can see a demo now. And what's interesting about the piece here is that one of the things that we wanted to get across in this before we get too far into it is that everybody needs to get started. So to go back and not to sell, you know, periphery storage specifically, but object storage is incredibly important in this whole thing, because you can't be moving your files around to act on them with a lot of processes. And this will take multiple AI processes. So I just want to say, for those of you who haven't looked at object storage yet, whether in the cloud or on premise, that's a really key thing, because all of these technologies are going to happen on stable, predictable file systems. And so there's an interesting thing where we always saw this stuff as archive. Actually, it's becoming the actual production storage.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing for me. I joked a few years ago about bringing on the death of the file system. And I was on the phone, on a Zoom with a bunch of people from a file system company, and they freaked out. But that's a big deal that, you know, putting your head there. But with that, talking about that, yes, so there's a problem with this. Let's talk about reality. The problem is that you're not going to run this on your local machine for several years. So when you go, hey, yeah, we're going to do transcription on my local Premier, that's cool. But when you start doing that at scale, right? So that's why there's this weird sort of illusion of usability in certain systems, right? And word search is really great. Right now in our Acomi product, we have a key code customer has 4,000 hours of transcription, and they do keyword searching across 4,000 hours of content. Now, someone could have sat for 8 hours a day and watched for 2 years and watched all 4,000 hours, like TV producers do sometimes. But in this case, they were able to quickly do word searches. Now, in a few months, they'll be able to do conceptual searches.
What was the ballpark cost to get that for them?
To get that run at the time they did it. And this was, like I said, this was expensive at the time. I think the first big tranche they ran was about $25,000.
So how much time will it take a person watching video at $25,000 to exhaust money?
Yeah. A week. Well, producer in LA for 2 years to watch it and then answer questions to everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. That's a $350,000 adventure.
Yeah. Well, and the other big thing too, we're going to talk about the object storage, is that a lot of what people see in AI, even today, a lot of people are focused on all this AI happening in the cloud, and there's all these great things you can do if you run this in the cloud, and look at this great example if I throw this asset up in the cloud and all this information I can pull. But the problem is, if you want to get a good amount of information, like all the different prompts and things that we run whenever we analyze an asset, we'll test sometimes with cloud models for comparison because we're using all local models. The reason why we're using all local models is when you run the same exact thing in the cloud, it costs about $1 per asset.
Yeah.
So if you have 5 million assets in your archive, you better have $5 million today and another $5 million in about 8 months when everything's a lot better. So you can go run it again and get the newer information and just keep going forever. So to us, that's why the cloud model doesn't always make sense for everything. There are certain places where it makes sense.
And but, the thing here also is we're getting to a point where you're realizing that the math on how much it costs to do that without AI doesn't make any sense. These systems are doing work we will never do. We're not going to spend the money to go out and get these insights.
So I you know, I spent my early career making a lot of bad reality television, and
and
transcription was precious, right? Transcription was precious because it was expensive. So we would transcribe certain key interviews. Right now, our unscripted customers are basically transcribing everything because they can. It's all word searchable now. Right. So they can go in and say, OK, we're doing 2000 hours. We're going to make it all searchable immediately. There is a point to what he's saying in here, though. So there's two parts of that. One, also, we're doing a hybrid model where, for instance, some of the AI, the tagging, the transcription, all that is cloud. But then the LLMs are local. So at North Shore, we're kind of developing a hybrid because one thing we are talking about here, everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to run AI on my content. No, actually, when he's talking about vectorization, it runs. You know, you tag and run on the content, but then you're actually running your question through the LLM and it's actually putting together those results. So every question you ask goes through an LLM. Yep. And so that's why there's AI on both ends. And so that's why you need to look at your usage, like you said, with that. But there are a lot of local, you know, right now you can on your laptop run an LLM there, you know, you can get Ollama and download that and play with it on a laptop. So the line of that is, like you said, if you're doing a lot of assets, you're doing a lot of work, you've got an on-prem model that's got to work there. I will say, and this, I was here a year ago and I asked about cloud storage. And I was like, how many people are managing more than a couple of terabytes in the cloud? And like 3 people out of 100 said, hey. I said then, like, hey, go to Wasabi and get an account and start playing around. Like KeyCode will get you a demo. And the same thing can happen with AI. You can do a POC with KeyCode and like test some content for a few grand and see what you get out of it. And that's the thing that's happening now, because then you need a consultant to say, somebody said this to me at NAB, they said, oh, we used to have a consultant to buy a MAM. And now you can just kind of build a MAM pretty quickly, relatively quickly and all. But now you need a consultant to be buying and using AI and cloud services. And that's where, like for us, we live or die by the resellers and the SAs, because you have to be able to help somebody make a decision, because it might sound right to do it on-prem. It might sound right to do it in the cloud. Everybody has this weird gray area between which is which.
And the other thing is too, is that different tools work well in different circumstances. So one of the things we're doing is less focused on building that one tool that we think is the one and only tool that everyone's going to use. We're focused on building a platform that is actually leveraging a series of what we refer to as AI agents, where every agent actually can have its own AI model, its own specific training, its own specific set of functions and things that it's really good at. And we have about 5 agents that are in our standard deployment that are able to do things like being able to generate those transcriptions, extract audio from the video, generate visual transcripts where we actually are taking samples of the video and looking at the frames and using vision models to understand what's actually happening in the frame, so we can generate transcripts of things that have no talking but have descriptive narrative transcripts that get generated of the action. And all of that's really powerful, but for your specific use case, you might need something a lot more custom. So that's where we leverage partners to be able to actually go and say, hey, look, you can actually create your own agent directly in this system. You can bring your own model. We can work with any AI model because we think it has to be an open ecosystem that you can leverage what makes sense for you. And one other big thing is that the nature of the path and the life cycle of the files through storage is changing.
Yeah.
It used to always be capture everything onto tier one. Everything sits on your really expensive, fastest storage as long as possible, quite frankly, because no editor's ever going to tell you they're done with it and they don't need it again.
No producers.
No producers, of course. And then at that point, once you're hitting that 95% threshold on that storage that everyone told you don't go above 80% on, then you start to think about archive.
Yeah.
Well, what we're saying is now there's a couple different reasons why not to do that. Number one, with object storage as your archive, when we're running object locally with some of the things like we have with the periphery storage, the performance going back and forth to that storage has increased dramatically, that we can saturate those files very, very quickly. If you leverage something like Pixit on top of it, we can saturate those files behind the scenes. You don't even notice it's ever different. Your whole archive looks like it's online.
So what is the point of it being object storage as opposed to block? Why do we need that?
Yeah. So the point of it being object storage is that when your files go to that object, and the path here is that now as soon as files land on the tier one, first thing we do is send it to object and get it into tier two. Second, it gets to object, we run all the AI services on it. We enrich it. We generate all this metadata. And where do we store it? On the object. It's stored directly with the file. Now, it doesn't mean you might not still have benefit of a MAM. Part of what our agents can do and what APIs can do is you can take all that metadata, and the way it's written on the object, most MAMs can read it directly off that and inherit it. But the point is, your metadata lives with your data and with your files. So it doesn't matter what MAM you use. It doesn't matter where you go in the future. All that rich metadata you generate lives with the files long term. And it's all there protected on the object from the beginning, as soon as you capture it. Now, when it comes time to clean up space, you just get rid of stuff. You just delete stuff because everything was archived in the beginning when it was created, as soon as it landed. That's the process we're starting to see, because the other thing is the cost of that object storage is coming down a lot on-prem to start that to make a lot more sense in more and more places too. But then again, even if you are going to push it off to cloud, you're going to push these objects off that are enriched with metadata already. So it can travel with it. So
my piece on object to function is because Pete or whoever can't move the file. There is no folder. There never was a folder, by the way. I don't want to blow everybody's mind, but none of your storage has a folder on it. There's no such thing as a folder on a hard drive. I know.
It's okay.
I know. I'm red pilling them all right now. Yeah. But the thing is that I have the treat of working between developers, software developers, and real humans, and I've tried to explain a file system to a developer. And a few years ago, I had this thing with a lot of developers. And I said, well, he goes, why are we building this whole error checking thing into the system? I go, oh, because the path may change. And they're like, and he said, why would the path change? And I was like, because Pete or Sarah or whoever is going to grab it and think that they need to move it over here into the 2024 folder now, even though it was in 2017. And he was baffled. And after about 10 minutes, I gave it was Geo. And I just said it was Geo. I was like, man, you don't need to learn this. And the reason he doesn't need to learn this is because once everything goes object, I'm going to do my pose, the path is forever. And nothing changes. And so that means that your AI and your transcoder and your any system anywhere in the world can find it.
Yeah.
And always and forever. And people can move it around and think they're moving it on that tier one or whatever, but there is a stable, retrievable, and an archive becomes active. That's why they all have these names like active whatever, because the archive becomes a near line, becomes usable. And so I don't sell storage. I don't work for periphery, but I'm so annoyed by old file systems where everyone's mounted. Hey, Paul, you have a UNC path. Well, mine's letter G. Mine's letter F. Oh, mine's called media volume / media 3. Well, great. Good luck. Everyone get to work. Once it's in an object store, it's got one ID, and that ID is global.
So. Exactly.
And that was also the whole idea behind the front end of MAMS, that we could eliminate all of this, flatten out the structure, and then we'd be using a dashboard to get in there and see things.
Yeah.
But
I'm Pete, a ma'am guy and that
Pete,
never worked.
Pete happened and, like, yeah, yeah. and Amy and...
Yeah, I'm a ma'am guy and that never worked, right? Because no one, everyone's going to go around. Like, you could have the best ma'am in the world and the friggin' graphic designer is going to open Photoshop from the file system no matter what, right? Doesn't matter. Does not matter. Like, let's live in the real world. But what's interesting is that when you get in, if you think about how the web works, right? That's how the web works. That website knows that that picture is going to be there for 20 years. And that's what we got to get to. And the tools are evolving there. But, you know, if I sound excited, hype because I was a support guy, your support costs go so far down when you can't let humans touch things.
Well, when you have humans think they're touching things, but they're actually not.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the key.
You have to lie to people. That's what we're saying here. It's all about lying to people.
We're not lying. We're just presenting a user dashboard that they're so similar.
Access.
Jeff is so smooth.
Controlled
Years
access.
Crawling around under Avid Base, plugging things in.
That'll happen. It's something about the plastic.
All right, so that was actually fun, but yeah, I mean, that's
so that was the first question.
that was some of the first questions.
But I just want to say that we keep coming back to the fact that the thing we're generating is text because humans can use it and it's immutable, and that's what's really wild about it, is it keeps coming back to that. And the reason I say that is because that's a good place to start with AI, and it actually works today, and you don't get weird looking hands or like one eye too big or anything like that.
Well, unless that's actually a creative intent.
Yeah.
So keep going. What other parts of applications do you think are going to end up getting peeled back and having the insight into these libraries and this object storage enabled in?
Well, I mean, you mean as far as like in production, like what will go to that?
Yeah, well, production, you know, we know people are putting front ends on NLEs.
Yeah.
And what else?
Well, I mean, I don't know if there's anybody, there's no one on this panel from a tier one storage company, but I mean, eventually this all becomes fast. Eventually if the cloud becomes fast enough or remote becomes fast enough, you have a private data center. Eventually the future is that it is all just that, because that's what the internet was based on. And that's how the internet works, right? YouTube doesn't have folders. They don't go looking for a file at YouTube. You put that file up and it's there and it's in object storage and it's protected forever.
Yeah. And that was part of the discussion we had in the last panel, was that people are beginning to move toward data centers, whether they're hyperscalers or their own data lakes. It's object storage that's on-prem.
Yeah.
Because it's come down from the cloud.
But with Jason's piece, just a pitch for you for a second, Jason's piece of this platform, right? The idea of periphery as a platform for me is like, that's where it has to come. Is that we all know that Avid, like we were saying, a Bay used to be a Sony Bay or a JVC Bay. And then, you know, Avid came, Final Cut, Premiere. Now a Bay is 20 vendors together. That's what's happening in the data and content management system, is that you have to be able to do it. So for instance, right now you're talking about the search. Yeah, the idea would be that there would be a panel in every application that could access this data, right? That's where we're going, is so that you basically bring the interface to the user, right?
The other piece of it too, though, is that search is still just one piece of what we can do with it, right? So a good example of that is we started talking about ICE, this new application and this new interface that we're using to be able to give you that interface to just ask questions against your entire set of content and be able to get back content based on the relevancy to that question, not based off any specific metadata. But then what was really interesting is one of the first conversations I had with some friends at one of the studios was that I said, oh, well, so what happens if I ingest 40 years of production reports? I don't care about finding those reports. I care about asking questions about the reports to understand, hey, when we're going to go do this next project that's in this similar location we've shot in 10 times before with this similar actors that we've shot with 10 times before, what are the most likely reasons why we will or will not make our day? And so we're starting to see how not just storing the information, not just providing descriptive metadata, but there's actually action that can be taken based off of that information. And there's a whole different area that this is going to evolve into of things we can do. And that's where, as a platform, what we're building is to say, we know one thing for sure, we have no clue all the different things that people will want to do and people could do with this. So we want to build a platform that simplifies the really, really complicated, hard stuff, leverages the storage that we really understand from an object storage perspective and from a perspective of working with partners like Pixit, where we can make your whole multi-petabyte library look and feel like it's all tier one. But then we want to be able to give the tools of this platform to partners like Bryson and others to say, hey, go build some awesome things for exactly what these guys need so that we can make it something that you can truly transform the workflow and simplify the things that, again, people don't want to do and people aren't good at doing, so that the people can focus on telling the story, on finding the content, on doing things like something I can't wait to be able to have some good stories of that we'll find the right customers for. But in the world of documentaries, for all those who've ever done any documentaries, wouldn't it be nice if when you searched for a clip, you were actually searching across every bit of content instead of the 20% you actually had time to watch? Because you have 300 hours of content and someone gave you a week to go cut something. You have no clue what the hell you have. And no one's ever going to tag it all. But AI could understand it all. And when you ask the AI, it could present you all the parts that you should be looking at.
Yep.
That's the part where I think this can be really transformative.
Doing those things that we are not going to pay to do.
Yeah, man.
So
one thing I should mention, which for those of you who haven't been around object storage, every cloud storage system is object based. So just so you know, S3, Wasabi, Backblaze, all those companies, that's all object storage. So on premise object storage is what Periphery does, but actually it's really funny because the technology, the software that you guys own probably is under a lot of those systems anyway. So just to let that know that like that can be as small as a system in your building, or it can be all of Amazon S3.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, and one other quick thing. The other fun thing about that too is that it's getting smaller all the time.
Yeah.
We're about to release something that literally takes something that historically, when you were using some of our storage systems like Swarm, it took us big infrastructure of many, many servers and all this different stuff to be able to run it. We now have ways to be able to run that entire stack on a single server. Yeah. It brings down cost dramatically. It brings down complexity dramatically. And that's the whole thing, is as time goes on, we continue to find ways to simplify and make it less expensive and just easier to access and easier to implement so that more and more people can take advantage.
So let's talk about the models and why a model that you're providing is more compelling for a lot of people than a model that they would get, you know, from the internet, just pulling off of a hyperscaler.
Yeah, definitely. So how many different models do people think that there are out there right now that people are actually using? Any guesses? How many people think that there's over like 100 good quality models out there right now that you could go access? Any hands? How many think there's more?
Right.
Yeah. So right now, you can access about 520,000 models that are all open source and all available. Right. Now, do you want to go through all that and figure out what the hell it might be good? No. So one of the things that we do is, as part of this open architecture of what we build, when we deploy a system with our AI within ICE, we have a set of models. We normally have a vision model. We normally have a transcription model. And we normally have a couple other models that are more like general kind of AI models, like Mistral, things that you've heard of like those, to be used for different things. But every single one of those, you can swap out at any point in time. And so what we do is we provide recommendations of what we believe is kind of the best of breed of the top kind of 10 models of every different category. But we don't make models. We don't even tune the models usually. We just provide suggestions and recommendations so that our partners, our integrators, can go and help ensure you get exactly the one that's going to work best for you in your environment. And then 6 months from now, 8 months from now, when it all changes and there's something much, much better, you swap it out very quickly, and now you're up and running with something new and the better capabilities and the new stuff that can be done.
To the same media, right?
Same exact media, exactly. So sometimes you'll actually want to rerun content through it when the new model comes out because it's that much better. Other times it's good enough to just say, hey, now we know every new piece of content is going to get even better results with this new stuff that just, you know, just came out. And it happens fast. I'll tell you, we've been working on something for the last like 8 months, 9 months, and we were working with vision models. And if you asked me which model I would have used, you know, 10 months ago in the vision side, I was like, well, there was only like OpenAI. It was the only one that had anything decent. Then like 2 months after that, you know, 8 months ago, then you had a model from Microsoft called Lava. And then 6 months, there was something called CogVLM. Then you had something called Moondream. Then all of a sudden, now we had a new one that came out just about 3 months ago out of China called, I can't even remember, Quen VLM. I mean, these things change rapidly. So
yeah, that's the thing. Like, you can get pretty far. Like, you can go home. You can have a smart young script kid at your office, and they'll go, look, I'm going to do this. And they actually can do some pretty cool stuff. Like, the PDF thing you were talking about, that's fairly doable. And you can certainly right now like do that. What happens is just like everything in this whole group knows, the minute you add video to something, everything goes crazy because everything gets bigger and harder, right, with that. But it was one thing you mentioned about that. I had people, we love this. So we do an ad campaign right now called Unscripted, Call Me Unscripted. And it's just about the fact that just to try to get someone to use AI at all, we've got people started transcribing and they're like, oh, we can use this. We can word search. Good. We're trying to get people used to it. And like you said, hey, just run something once. We were talking to somebody at NAB and they were like, oh yeah, we tried AI transcription. It just wasn't really accurate enough. And I was like, when was that? And they were like, 2-3 years ago. And I was like, that is right? Like 100 years ago in AI terms. So if you're not reevaluating stuff every 3 to 6 months, so what you're getting from Periphery, from Wasabi with Wasabi Air, from North Shore in certain cases, is you're getting people that are testing, that are integrating and tuning this stuff for you. And basically we're caddies. Oh, you need this club. Oh, you need this club. That's what these companies are providing. We joke about it. Like every now and then I'll even slip up and say our AI. What you mean is we mean our premium blend of these perfect models to achieve your goals, because we're doing this across, you know, hundreds and thousands of customers so we can keep up with it. So, you know, that was one thing that's important though, is that people should play around. But like we went to meet a customer and they were like, oh yeah, I worked on this thing for like 3 months and I got right here. And then they couldn't type the video. And we're like, yeah.
Well, it's also the things that we discover from working with customers and people asking for something. Like, for example, we have a utility that's just generating metadata for your metadata fields inside of a MAM, like inside of Iconic, for example. And we had all this great metadata generated, and then someone said, oh, this is great, but we really have an audience of people that are across multiple countries and multiple languages. So how would that work? I said, well, we just added two words to the end of every prompt in French.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you have all the same metadata in French.
That's
in
that,
every
that's
single one of those, metadata
so
field.
Who that's is, one of those moments.
Who's exactly. going to do that work themselves? Show of hands?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So the other thing here is, based upon what is being described here, who's afraid of this AI?
Well, they're more afraid of us.
No, well, yeah. who's a little lost? Show of hands? Okay. It's okay. Yeah. That's the part of having smart people who can figure this out.
Let me leave. This is important. I'm going to go back to Vector because it's really hard. We don't have anything to show. So let's set the stage of this right now. So I saw some of you, I didn't get to see, we're laughing. Also, man, like anything, I really love like talking to you because both of us had broken demos at the moment. It made me laugh because we're both running like the bleeding edge of everything, right? So this morning I was like talking to him, I was like, get this fired up so we can show this. So first you can talk to Keycode and get demos of this stuff. So if this is intriguing to you, if you have this problem, you can, like you said, we have some ways that you can start small. Keycode has some pretty small ways you can just be like, get into this. But one thing I wanted to bring up is really funny because we think that vectorization is really important for a couple of reasons. I want to talk real world for a second. One, looking at the age of people in here, and we probably all remember when we got the new BlackBerry in like 2000, late 2007.
It was awesome.
And we got the new BlackBerry and then the iPhone came out and everybody was like, God damn it, I'm on like a 2-year contract and I'm stuck with this BlackBerry for 2 more years. Well, that's what's happening right now. The reason there's not a MAM company on this stage is that MAMs have mostly built their systems a few years ago, and they're awesome. I still work with them, love it. All our customers have a MAM. But we're talking about an area now that's content discovery. It's going to work with your MAM. And the reason is because it's going to take some horsepower. It's going to, you know, these LLMs are not, you know, like they need some horsepower. And also they're hard to scale across multiple organizations. So that's why we're here, because our customers are buying this for their organization. They're not buying something from the cloud that's, you know, now some of our stuff runs in the cloud, but it's single premise, like AWS, single compute, stuff like that. I wanted to give this because he and I were talking about vectors. It sounds really weird. The reason these databases are difficult to scale, though we both have products that do it, is that me, thanks to my co-founder, not anything I did. Jason's actually smart. I'm just pretty. But this analogy really works when you go back to the metadata thing again. So vectorization is really a thing. So if we were riding back from Vegas together, we didn't, but in this timeline, we were. And I said, hey, Jason, man, you got headphones? He'd be like, yeah. And he would show me his AirPods probably. Now, I didn't ask him for AirPods. I asked him for headphones, and he didn't say no. You know, databases are such jerks. If you ask them, do you have headphones? You go, no.
No headphones.
Meanwhile, it's got AirPods, right? No. So what vectorization does is it says, okay, I'm going to create a 3D space like a GPS coordinate. And what he was talking about, those numerical equivalents. And let's say that like Apple is right here. And let's say that headphones is here and earbuds is here. AirPods fits about right there. And maybe music is here and personal electronics pretty close, podcasting down here. And it's, you're moving it around in that vector like a Venn diagram till you know about what it's like. And then when I asked the question, do you have headphones? What he did is he actually ran it through his LLM and he said, he asked me for headphones. This is KNN, the K nearest neighbor, which is the numerical expression of that. He means headphones. I'm not going to be a jerk and say, no, I'm just going to show him my AirPods. That's how these things are working. Why we bring that up is that if you have a MAM or a DAM that doesn't integrate a vector database, you're going to have something to do this. So be very careful, because everyone out there says,
to do this.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing, because when people say, oh, I'm going to do this, it may be a long time. And so that's why we're starting to talk here about it, because there's kind of now this segregation. Still good reasons to have a media asset management system, but content discovery is going to be a different field.
And that content discovery goes into the asset management system.
Absolutely.
Who here has used an asset management system?
Let's see.
Who here loved that asset management system?
Nobody.
We've got a guy who works for us who says, if you love your asset manager, you haven't used it, because it's full of junk or nothing. No one wants to do the efforts to do this. Basically what we're saying is, hey, go out and figure this out for me, inform my asset management system. So when I show up and say, I'd like some headphones, it simply won't say no.
Yeah. Or like you said, show me romantic scenes. If you've ever worked in promo, some of you have. If you worked in promo, one of our first case studies that we're doing right now, proof of concept, science project with somebody, is imagine you had 25 years of a TV show and someone said, make me a Valentine's Day promo. Right? And I talked to, it's so funny, Dave from LucidLink, you can tell, go hassle him about this. Dave worked at one of the big media companies and his whole job was putting together thematic spots from like hundreds of music videos, and he would spend 6 months just watching music videos. And when I showed him my demo, he was just like, oh my God. And I wasted my life. Wait. He was like, oh my God, this is blowing my mind. And I said, yeah, it's pretty cool, right? And he goes, no, man, I had this job. And he told me about the job, and I was like, oh, and he just was like regretting that year of his life.
But he's got all the salt and pepper lyrics in his head.
Yeah, come on, man.
That's a trade-off.
What a man. Yeah. It's not about the vector, but it's about what you want to hear is somebody has an Elastic index, right? You need Elastic for that, right? SQL, you'll chug through because it's going to read through everything. My partner taught me that when you have an index, you go to the back of the book. Where's that word? There it is, right? So that's why you're going to see a change as this happens. I'm going to put it out here again. In 2017, I coined the term the metadata tsunami because I knew that these databases, because I'd worked with them for 17 years now, they were not going to handle this metadata. And that's why we changed our product, because that. But what you're talking about, absolutely, you need something that has a crazy, crazy fast. And that's also why sometimes you're going to need more horsepower, right? But yes.
Yeah, and that's where on our side, on the storage side, what we do is, within Swarm Storage, for example, there's actually an Elasticsearch engine built into every single node of the storage. Yeah. So as your storage expands, your capacity and performance to search across that storage naturally expands as well.
Wait, you guys don't use Sherlock?
but yeah, and then as far as on the vector side of things too, you know, yeah, it's all about being able to find that content in that point of the vector space. So even as that vector space might start to get crowded, being able to find that point is still a lot faster than when you're searching traditional databases on that side.
Yeah.
But it all just depends. When you're doing a search, the other thing about how we're searching on the AI side is, again, if you're searching through ICE, our intelligent content engine, it's not designed to be a replacement for the MAM. This is really for different people. You're all your creatives, the people who are actually working in the NLEs and stuff, you're still using a MAM system that now has just been filled with all this rich metadata, so that every one of those 30 metadata fields is filled 100% of the time with high quality metadata.
Yeah.
That's what it brought to the table there. But for the marketing person who wants to find something in that MAM, who normally would go and open that MAM interface and then close that MAM interface and go call you and say, find this for me.
Yeah.
That person now can just ask the question into a simple chat interface and say, hey, I need all the content of, you know, every romantic show we've done over the last 5 years, or every romantic episode of this, because we have, you know, Valentine's Day coming up. And that's where you can find that relevant content in a different way.
So the thing about the question there, and this will be the final question, it gets to come from me.
Yeah.
Whose mind is blown? Show of hands. Okay.
How was this different than what you thought it was going to be when you came in? That's the real question I want to know, right? Yeah, the nods good. Tell you. Yeah, thank you.
So that's the whole point. We want to keep you ahead of the technology that...
Yeah, I'm going to say...
Even people are afraid of.
Like, not that he needs more credit, but Kavanaugh picked this, and I get it now. You know what I mean? Like, seeing that, because he didn't want to bring the same, like, hey, look, you can tag a red bicycle. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. That's our joke. Like, tagging is a complete failure. Tagging was a failure, but tagging will get you somewhere, and that's what we're doing. And you got to start somewhere.
Tagging made us angry. So we don't want to be angry. We want
results. That's not a red bicycle. That's a moped.
Jason, Bryson, thanks for joining
me
today.
Man, super fun, dude.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody for coming.
Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow Key Code Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV broadcast and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.